11 o'clock headlines brought to you by VenueKings.com. VenueKings.com wants to let you know that last night in sports, there really weren't that many sports.
I didn't watch anything. Was there anything on?
Well, there's no NBA. There was no Mariners.
Was there hockey?
There was hockey.
Oh, I wasn't.
There was an 8-0 win for the Tampa Bay Lightning. They
wait, 8-0 in a hockey game?
Yeah, 8-0 in a hockey game. That's what I'm talking about.
In the playoffs?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very. Is their coach going to get fired?
What?
Is their coach going to get fired?
I don't think. Well, he's in the playoffs, so you can't fire a coach in the playoffs.
You can.
I guess.
No rule.
I mean, they're
the
defending
right?
champs, right? So.
8-0.
They beat the Islanders 8-0 last night, and you could have heard that right here on Sports Radio 950 KJR. Meanwhile, in the NBA, Clippers and Suns game 2 in Phoenix tonight. The Mariners are in Colorado to take on the Rockies, so we'll see how they finish up their after their big weekend sweep of the Rays in a 4-game set. We'll have J.P. Crawford on here at 11:30 to talk about the weekend that was, man, his grand slam, all his heroics, Shed Long, all that. We'll talk about all that with J.P. Crawford here in coming up in about 28 minutes. And next hour, we'll be auctioning off an opportunity at the studio sponsorship rights as well. But right now, man, we got a lot to talk about with John Canzano.
Coming to you live from our Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is our weekly conversation with the Oregonians' John Canzano. Brought to you by Reflex Knee Clinic in Bellevue, the knee experts. Don't let knee pain limit your lifestyle. Log on to ReflexKnees.com to schedule your knee evaluation. Now with John Canzano, here's Puck and Slick.
All right, John, welcome in. Thanks. It's all brought to us by Reflex Knees, ReflexKnees.com. John, we sent Puckett away, and we really should do that more often because I get to have Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic in with me today. So no Puck, unfortunately, for you to talk to, but you get us clowns instead. How about that?
Hey, I'm excited about it. This is Wally Pipp, Lou Gehrig moment.
I know. I think he really does have to be worried, by the way. We just had a first hour. It was a great first hour with Mike. And so, you know, we'll build on that. A lot to talk about today. I mean, just news right and left coming out of college athletics. And I guess I'll start with just what's happening today. Meetings on the college football playoff expanding, which, I mean, it looks like it's a foregone conclusion that's going to expand. It's just the how and the when that are kind of up in the air now, right?
Yeah, and as they're meeting, they're figuring out that it's more complicated than just like we did on the playground where we said, all right, let's play permanent quarterback. Here are the rules. Like they're getting into the legalities of it, and there's some contracts that are existing for the existing college football playoff that are tricky to unwind. But there's so much motivation. It makes so much sense. There's so much public pressure that I think they will get it done. The Pac-12 looks a little bit, guys, like it's standing alone in wanting automatic qualifiers.
Yeah.
I think it's a great discussion. Like, should a Power 5 conference be worried that it needs to be protected to have one of the their conference champion be the one of the automatic bids? Like, the Pac-12 wants that. The other Power 5s are saying, nah, let's let it be merit-based.
Because they don't care, because they won't be get left out. Except maybe the Big 12, I guess, but... I mean, do you think the Pac-12 has a shot at getting that in there? It sounds like, I mean, with everybody against it, I mean, there's a possibility that the Pac-12 could get left in the dark on this.
Yeah, they're standing alone right now. And I think the logic is this, like the SEC and the Big Ten are going, look, we want as big a piece of this pie as we are entitled to get. And I don't blame them for that, because they're probably looking at 12 spots and going, okay, how do we get three? Like, how do we get three of our members in there and get a big chunk of this thing? And the only way you get three is your conference champion gets in, and the entire field is subject to, hey, let's just pick the best 12 teams. Because year in and year out, in the top 12, in the rankings and the polls and the playoff criteria, we see the SEC and the Big Ten have two and three teams that are in that top 12. So they're all in favor of that. The Pac-12, meanwhile, is sitting back going, look, we are a little skittish here. Don't blame us. We've been left out so many times that we want to ensure that our conference champion gets in. And I think in a good year, the Pac-12 would get two teams in.
Yeah. So John, is there any apprehension with expansion in the playoff format tied to like the pageantry and the tradition in some of these bowl games? I'm thinking of people who may want like who are worried that like the Rose Bowl, instead of being the granddaddy of them all or whatever, becomes like this game played on December 20th between like Oregon and San Diego State. Like, is that any worries there?
Real concern right now, and it's what it is being talked about. I had a Pac-12 athletic director tell me that, like, the Pac-12 is super interested in protecting sort of the history of that game. And, yeah, in most years they would prefer, like, if a Big Ten and a Pac-12 team are in, could that be shifted to the Rose Bowl? Could that game be a neutral site? Could it, you know, how do you utilize the Rose Bowl if the Rose Bowl is not one of those games that it features those playoff teams? So I think it's a real concern right now, and I think, you know, the Rose Bowl, given what happened last year with the Rose Bowl being played in Texas, so to speak, I think they're also concerned there that they want to hold on to the brand. And within the Rose Bowl community, there's a ongoing legal battle between the tournament of roses and the Rose Bowl itself. So it's like all of this is coming to a head, and I think if the Rose Bowl doesn't come out of this with a Pac-12 alliance somehow, it would be a crying shame.
We're talking with John Canzano, Pac-12 maven, of course, writer, longtime columnist for the Oregonian and host of the Bald Faced Truth on 750 The Game down in Portland. You can find him there from 12 to 3 every day. John, kind of expanding out into college athletics in general, you know, the Supreme Court ruling, it was announced yesterday. There were a couple of different facets, really, that came down from that ruling. But, I mean, just the amateurism in general, it sounds like, you know, proving that and maintaining that may be a real big issue for the NCAA, and some of its foundation might be crumbling underneath them.
Yeah, it's, you know, and you've got states that have name, image, likeness legislation that is going to be passed, and you have states that don't have it anywhere near on the books, like the state of Indiana, home to the NCAA, interestingly enough, does not have any name, image, likeness legislation coming forth. Like, Oregon is passing this stuff that's going to pass in five states in the Pac-12 footprint. It's going to pass. So does it give an advantage to the Pac-12 teams? What does it do to the NCAA? Is college athletics, as we once knew it and grew up on, is it gone? Is it going to be some blend of semi-pro? What is it going to feel like? I think everybody's kind of wondering what's going to happen. I think ultimately the NCAA and colleges made deals with television years ago that lined their pockets. They did not share it with the athletes, and they're paying the bill now.
Is amateurism as we know it about to die in this sport, John?
I think there's a place for it. I just don't think it's going to be in revenue-generating sports. Like, I really do think you're going to see some universities that aren't playing football, that may choose to not play men's basketball because they can't afford to fund those programs, that are going to say, look, we're just about true amateurism, and you're going to see tennis and golf and water polo and swimming and other sports offered at some colleges. And I also think there's a chance here that you get Northwestern and Stanford and Vanderbilt and others that just go, hey, we're about the complete educational experience. We're not about paying a bunch of football and basketball players to be part of our campus. So I think a lot of people are going to question their mission. I'm optimistic that what comes of this is that, you know, athletes are able to negotiate their own endorsement deals and that it's clean and above board, but we all know otherwise. Like, if you're Oregon, you're looking over at Nike right now going, hey, do we have an advantage here?
You know, John, something else I'm curious about, too. Like, I'm for college athletes getting, you know, getting paid, you know, for, like, a million reasons. Though I'm curious on how realistic it is that, like, you know, I'm a Washington State grad, and the other day, Noah Williams, star guard, he posted, like, hey, I can get money now starting July 1st. Any endorsements? And I'm like, how many kids are going to actually benefit from, like, how marketable and profitable are guys who aren't the, you know, the star running back at Alabama? You know what I mean? Like, how many guys are going to actually benefit from this?
Yeah, I think that's the real question is, you know, the stars are easy. Justin Herbert, while at Oregon, you know, that was a no-brainer. He could have made some money. Sabrina Ionescu could have, in her last season, taken that Nike endorsement deal and made money. Like, I think the stars will get paid, but the market's not going to lie. I think there's, you know, the rest of the athletes are going to be left fighting over scraps. And also probably cannibalizing their own athletic department because, you know, Dutch Bros isn't going to sign on with a deal with Oregon or Oregon State you know, or Washington or Washington State, if they can get a more visible deal done with the starting quarterbacks at those four schools. So what happens inside your athletic department with existing sponsors that go, hey, we can get same visibility for a fraction of the price?
Yeah, I mean, do you view that as a problem? I mean, just you're going to have, I don't know, and maybe you've got the star running back. Maybe, I don't know, if you got, for instance, like a Penny Sewell or something, you've got like a left tackle that has a high profile, and so, you know, the car dealership has them do a commercial or whatever, but you've got 97% of the roster that, I mean, I don't even know, are they even benefiting from that at all? Probably not. I don't know. Is there a situation where it could actually end up being worse than it is right now for the majority?
Yeah, I think that there could be, because I think, you know, the colleges themselves are not going to take less money. Right. They're just going to cut, and they're going to cut sports that are not revenue producing. Mm. So they're going to justify it by going, look, we have fewer sponsorship dollars. We've got to account more resources for football and men's basketball because that's what butters the bread. And so, you know, we're not going to have the equestrian team, or we're not going to have, we're not going to offer women's soccer anymore because we just simply can't afford it. So I do think that there's a risk here that ultimately the bill that is coming due ends up landing with some of those athletes in non-revenue generating sports.
John, what have you learned about how coaches and maybe athletic directors are responding to what seems like the college equivalent of the player empowerment era in the NBA, where like kids can transfer more freely now? We got the portals like trending on Twitter every other day in the summer, it feels like. And now the kids are going to be able to generate money on their own. Like, how are the people who are used to being in power and having all the power responding to some of that power shifting to the labor?
Yeah, I think the coaches are largely supportive, but I can't tell if they're supportive because they think it's about damn time players shared in the financial success, or if they know they've got to recruit, and so it's in their best interest to appear to be publicly supportive of the system. So I just think there's a real swirl of emotion right now. A lot of states are going, well, what about us? For example, let's just say in California, if there hypothetically there was no legislation for name, image, likeness passed, but in Oregon there was. So you have recruits in Southern California that, you know, it's not just pick between USC and Oregon. It's, hey, if you go to Oregon, you can also get an endorsement deal. And guess what? Nike's lined up. I mean, we're talking about a whole nother equation here in a twist to amateurism that not everyone's going to be comfortable with.
We were talking NBA earlier, John. Obviously, coaching carousel happening right now. It seems like every day you get a new news story coming out of Portland and a new name kind of thrown into that mix. Where are we on the search for a head coach for the Blazers?
Yeah, it's a charade right now. I think, you know, they're talking about Becky Hammond. They're talking for a second time this week with her. They're also talking with Chauncey Billups, and by they I mean Neil Olshey, the Blazers GM. He has seized control of Trailblazers, Inc. And in the wake of Paul Allen's death, there was a lot of status quo that went on with the Blazers organization. I'm not sure about the Seahawks, but I would gather it's probably the same. Mm-hmm. There was a real effort to sort of just punt everything down the road. And what the Blazers did after Paul died, of course, Jody took control of the team, but there's probate that's going on, and I cannot imagine the unwinding of Paul Allen's estate is a simple thing.
Sure.
So the Blazers extended Terry Stotts at the time, their coach. They extended Neil Olshey, the general manager. They gave Damian Lillard a max contract. All of that happened like in the weeks after Paul Allen's death. It was basically an announcement of, hey, it's going to be status quo here. We're not changing anything. The problem with that is that they got a little stale, right? And they ultimately fired Stotts this offseason. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really good coach, but I think, you know, 9 or 10 years is the right amount of time to be with an organization. But Neil Olshey has grabbed control of this team, and it's not a good thing. He hasn't drafted well since Damian Lillard. He has not made the free agent moves he's needed to make. He's made some bad trades and gave up all their draft assets. They don't have a first-round pick, and he's left, you know, being the sole person who's picking the coach here. I believe for that reason it's going to be Chauncey Billups. That was his guy all along.
I read a headline the other day saying that if Jody Allen had her choice, it would end up being Becky Hammon. And I thought, well, she does have her choice. I mean, she owns the team right now. But it sounds like you're saying that she's not going to insert herself into the process.
I hope she does. Like, I think, look, you're the Portland Trailblazers. Look, you're not hiring Becky Hammon because she's a woman.
Right.
You're hiring her because she's a damn good coach who happens to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're the Trailblazers, you have an opportunity here to, you know, it's history. It's like the Brooklyn Dodgers. You know, this came up on my show this week. You know, the Brooklyn Dodgers didn't put Jackie Robinson into the lineup because he was black.
Mm-hmm.
They put Jackie Robinson into the lineup because he could not fail. He wasn't going to fail. Becky Hammon's not going to fail.
Yeah.
Like, she's, I think, on that same caliber as a coach. I think she'll be terrific for somebody. I'm just not convinced that Neil Olshey has done anything more here than assemble a charade, because from the beginning, he wanted Chauncey Billups. And unless somebody else hires Chauncey Billups out from under him, I think the Blazers are going to make a mistake here.
Just before we wrap up here, John, are you hearing anything on the JT Tuimoloau front? I know he's taking his visits, kind of puttering around the country. Where are we at with him and his decision?
Yeah, he visited Ohio State. He's got Oregon here on the horizon, and then it's Nick Saban in the evil empire at Alabama. Saban will get the last word here. I'm told by people close to JT's family that he is probably not going to announce a decision until after he gets back home. I do hope that the Pac-12 wins this thing. I don't care if he goes to Oregon or Washington, but I think one of those entities would be a huge win for the conference.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it really comes down to a couple things. Like, is it playing for a national championship that matters to the kid? Is it getting to the NFL that matters to the kid? Those things are probably factors, but he's such a family-oriented kid. I'm not convinced, coming out of COVID, that he's going to want to be in Columbus or Tuscaloosa, or, you know, does he want to be that far away?
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, I'm really hopeful that Oregon or Washington lands the kid, but he's got to do what's best for him.
As we part ways, your publication, the Oregonian Sports Section, just tweeted out that Dear Johnson, nation's number 3 overall prospect and number 1 point guard, committed to Oregon as well. So that'll be a little nugget for you to be able to follow up on. Maybe we'll talk about him next week. How about that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the name of the game now. It's all recruiting. Mm-hmm. Coaches are living in the portal. Players are living in the portal. Everybody wants to get paid. It's 2021.
Sounds that sums it up perfectly. Thanks a lot, John. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, John.
Take care, guys.
All right, John Canzano there from the Oregonian. And again, you can hear him on the Bald-Faced Truth on 750 The Game every day from 12 to 3. You can read him. He's an Oregonian columnist, been doing it for years and years and years, doing a great job. And you can hear him here on Puck and Slick every Tuesday at 11 o'clock.
I got to push back on his notion that they haven't drafted well. The Blazers took CJ Elleby last year. And they just, that is the answer, right? Is no one in Portland talking about this year?
You know what? I don't think his name's come up a lot.
Oh, see, that's they're focused on the wrong CJ.
When they say trade CJ, I think that's who they're talking about.
No,
actually.
No, they're saying
but trade CJ Elleby for Ben Simmons. That's what they're saying.
No. Don't. I think that CJ right here in the Pacific Northwest, there you go. You get the other CJ out of here, and then you invest in CJ Elleby and Damian Lillard. There's your new backcourt.
CJ
right
Elleby had a pretty good game when he. I think Dame was out, CJ was out.
I think that was in Philly, too.
Yeah. See, so he's putting it on for his new home crowd. Look at that. News, where is the Pac-12 segment, right? News, similarly to what the Seahawks announced earlier today, news coming out of Husky Stadium over there, Montlake. Husky Stadium, full capacity this year.
Oh, man, what is that, like 7 softies that fills the whole building up? To account for either?
Well, you can imagine what his Twitter account looks like right now after receiving that news. And, of course, he is at Softy KJR. Listen, we have, like I said, it's a packed show today. Don't forget, 12:30, your opportunity. If you want to have the naming rights, you want the studio to be named after you for a week, 12:30 is the time to call in and bid for that. And the money from whatever you bid, the highest bidder at 12:30 is going to go to the Ronald McDonald House. We've already raised $11,000 for Ronald McDonald House, so whatever you're able to do there, we would happily accept your money to send to the Ronald McDonald House, and we will name the studio after you or your business, whatever you want to do. It's really good advertising, and so we'll do that at 12:30. Coming up next, though, I'm really excited about this. Look, the T-Mobile Park has become a house of horrors for opposing teams. And the Mariners Flyers looking to keep that going against the Colorado Rockies as the Rockies come to town here. And J.P. Crawford is one of the biggest reasons why it has been. We're going to talk to J.P. next on Sports Radio 950 KJR.